Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday evening, about 10:30 Eastern. Everybody's been traveling, and we'll talk about that in a second. But joining us from the Bay Area, where he's out with some family, and I believe going to a Warriors game before his big weekend on the MVP docket in Denver, is Tim Bontemps.
That's right, Brian. Warriors Sixers Friday. Bucks, Nuggets Saturday, Nuggets, Sixers Monday. Big weekend.
Big weekend in Denver.
That's right.
Just off the aeroplane from Memphis, Tennessee, where he was at John Morant's redemption game on Wednesday night. Back in Dallas, it's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Wendy, I wasn't able to get one of those hoodies for you, but we'll keep trying.
All right. Well, maybe they'll go into mass production. I'm at my mother's home in Akron, Ohio. So I'll be heading to a Cavaliers game over this weekend. Cavaliers, by the way, with a wild win on Thursday night. We'll talk to you about that. But also on the road, and we need to get a report from our fine producer, Jackson Ajello, who attended tonight's Knicks Magic game at the Amway Center. Jackson, defeat for your Knicks, now a three-game losing streak, 6 of 9. What is your report from attending this, Magic victory? Cole Anthony, 18 points off the bench. What do you got?
I certainly got that down the stretch of that game, Mitchell Robinson certainly cannot guard Wendell Carter Jr. in a pick-and-roll situation, and that it was about 70-30 Knicks, and the Knicks fans did not go home happy. That is for sure. And also the drummer. I would like to file a petition. I don't know who I need to work with on this, to the Orlando Magic, whoever is in charge of this, to have a drummer who just consistently plays right where my seats were throughout the game at random moments. So, so loud. There's music still playing as well. So it's a secondary music. And that will haunt me for the rest of the night. I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night to him playing some smooth jazz as Julius Randle dribbles up the court to take a contested fadeaway.
I guess Jackson didn't want us to see like the tear stains on his cheeks because he didn't pop on. Didn't pop on with the video for our YouTube.
He's not camera ready. He was on vacay. He's going down to see, I believe he's going to a Yankee spring training game.
I am going tomorrow.
Big weekend for Jackson. And by the way, you mentioned this Cavs win earlier to go with this Knicks loss. Catastrophic week for the Cavs because the Miami Heat are zooming up the standings. And if I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers, I do not want to be seeing Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo in the first round. And this win over the Nets today, these Knicks lost to Orlando, Miami beating the Knicks on Wednesday night. This is all coming up. Miami Heat this week. It's not good for the Cavs.
We'll see. I don't want to jump in on the USWB corner that McMahon has.
That was my first thought watching this game tonight. I was actually going to be a big win for the Nets.
Yeah, come on, man.
It was an absolutely. It was like the greatest moment of Isaiah Okoro's Isaac Okoro's.
Isaac Okoro.
You can tell I'm tired. You can tell I'm messing up names. Isaac Okoro's career. He hits a three. There's a screen. Donovan Mitchell's at the line with a free throw to tie with 11 seconds left. He botches the free throw, probably commits a lane violation, but gets the offensive rebound. It turns into a mess.
Well, he also missing two layups after he got the offensive rebound.
He missed one.
Just let the man talk.
Anyway, long story short, there's a scramble. Caris LeVert finds Isaac Okoro in the corner, hits a three with 0.7 seconds left. The Cavs celebrate at the Barclays Center. And pretty much locked down. I think their magic number to clinch the number 4 seed is down to 4.
Yeah, they're going to be the 4 seed.
With the Knicks losing also tonight in front of Jackson while he's getting drummed in his ear. By the way, had the Knicks like won tonight, had Randle backed up his 57 from earlier this week and, threw in like 45, Jackson would have been like, oh, man. I'll always remember that awesome drumming that was happening as the Knicks were pounding the Magic. But let them have their moment, Bontemps. It was an incredible, miraculous.
I was watching it. It was an awesome win.
You called it the catastrophic combination of events
is to me, in terms of the Cavs advancing in the playoffs, very bad. Because I would not want to be playing the Miami Heat in the first round. That's all.
This is among the long list of reasons that nobody likes you. Plenty of people like me.
First of all, I'm just speaking the truth.
Nobody with good taste. Urine-soaked wet blanket. This is an extreme case of you just tinkling all over a blanket and smothering people with it.
Let me ask the resident Cleveland person on the pod. If the Cavs are picking a team in the first round between Miami, New York, and Brooklyn, who's getting picked third on that list?
That's a no-brainer.
Miami Heat. So there you go. That's all my point is. The Knicks losing all these games, and the Heat winning all these games has gotten this thing right tight up. I thought it was going to be Cavs-Knicks for sure. Now
Isaac Okoro, their high lottery pick, who is struggling to have an NBA career because he can't shoot, made a game-winning three-pointer. I don't think they're crying because they won the game.
Of course.
Also, Donovan Mitchell is the best lane violator in the league. This is twice this year he's had game-saving lane violations.
It's true.
Yeah, this is the third time we've seen a missed free throw at the end of a game lead to a victory, basically. Luka, Donovan Mitchell, in that incredible 71-point game where he had the wild, just crazy putback to help force overtime. And this happened again. And by the way, all these situations that were friendly fire, remember in the Luka game when he had the incredible putback?
Oh, yeah.
That happened again tonight. The Nets had a friendly fire. I don't know which two players, but two players came together and knocked it out. I had someone in the league point out to me yesterday that the Heat are 40-34. They beat the Knicks on Wednesday night. It was an impressive performance by Jimmy Butler, which is what Jimmy Butler does. And as the season has gotten down to the stretch, Jimmy Butler is starting to really flex his muscle.
They got a huge game, by the way, with Brooklyn on Saturday too. And then they play the Knicks next week.
Right. The Knicks game will be potentially key for the Cavs to see what that happens there. So the Heat are 40-34. I don't know what they're going to finish. All they do is play close games. So they host the Nets, they host the Raptors, then they go to New York, and then their last five games are Mavericks at home. That's going to be challenging. Pistons on the road. Pistons haven't won in 2 months. 76ers on the road. Wizards on the road. Orlando at home. I don't know how many wins you're giving them there, but they're going to have a winning record.
At least three.
Right. Minimum. They're going to have a winning record. And this is what I'm building towards. They have a negative point differential. They're 40-34 and they have a negative point differential. Here are the teams right now that have a negative point differential. None of them have winning records. Okay. The Jazz are slightly above. The Lakers, we're going to talk about in a second, still under 500. That should just be a tagline for the 2000.
The Jazz, by the way, the Jazz are 0.0.
Right. It's 0.1. They rounded up. That should be the tagline for the Lakers. The 2022-23 LA Lakers, .. still below 500. the Hawks, the Timberwolves, the Wizards, the Blazers, the Magic, the Pacers, and then like the dregs at the bottom, Hornets, Pistons, Rockets, Spurs. The Heat have a comparable differential to all of those losing teams, and they're six games over 500. Okay. Let me tell you what I make of that. I make of it that when they win close, because like every Heat game is a close game. And two, that Eric Spoelstra should get consideration for coach of the year. Now Mike Brown's going to win it, but
my guy on the other side of the Red River deserves some pretty serious consideration too.
He certainly does.
Fair enough.
Does.
No longer coaching the tanker.
For sure not. Mark Dagenault is who he's referring. I think it's who you're referring to. That's what the Red River is.
That's who he's referring to. I was going to say, for people who aren't sure what the Red River is.
Yeah.
Give me the geography stuff.
Look him up on LinkedIn. He doesn't even need his LinkedIn account anymore.
You guys know that I have an affinity for Jalen Williams, their rookie, and Bontemps makes fun of me because
which one?
The wing player.
The lottery pick.
That's the lottery pick.
Bontemps makes fun of me for coming to the understanding that he's a good player during the season.
Well, Brian only found out he existed when he played against LeBron. So then it was like, oh, there's this guy.
Oh, stop. Don't do Wendy like that.
My point is, he told the story that when he came to the workout to do his workout last year for the Thunder, he had no idea Mark Dagenault was. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, wow, this guy's a, everybody seems to be paying attention to this guy. He seems to be a pretty good coach, because normally in the workouts, the development coaches or the assistants put you through it, not the head coach. And the head coach is out there and he found out afterwards. Yeah, that's the head coach. I just want to point out, the Heat doing their Heat things where they just sort of, gin stuff together. And like, it's just like last year, like I thought they were cooked in that series against the Celtics like four different times. And next thing you know, it's a game seven. And I thought the game was over. I went to the bathroom because I was figuring, oh, I'm going to be working a lot after the game. Went to the bathroom and they went like on a 6-0 run. Like I came out of the bathroom and they had the ball, the chance to tie. I was like, what the hell just happened? I would just like to point out that, while I think that we should give the Cavs their props for getting that victory, there is some reason if you're the Cavs, you'd much rather play a team that is not as playoff experienced than the Heat with a certified playoff.
Well, I was going to say the best player in the series, the best player in the series too, would be Jimmy Butler, which is not what you want to see if you're going into a series either. Well, I mean, I don't think that's a hot take.
Well, he's the most established playoff performer in the series.
I mean, I'm picking Jimmy Butler first if I'm going into a series with those teams.
He is the most established playoff performer, but Donovan Mitchell does have multiple 50-point playoff performances.
Donovan Mitchell's a great player. I don't think it's casting aspersions on him to say that Jimmy Butler would be picked first in that series. And Jimmy Butler's
we'll say this.
I think Donovan Mitchell will be all NBA this season, and Jimmy Butler probably won't.
Oh, Jimmy Butler absolutely will be all NBA this season. He'll be second team all NBA.
You think
lock that in? Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
look at the all NBA. Look at the all NBA forward.
That's aggressive. Okay.
There's three guys who are definitely going to make all NBA: Giannis, Jason Tatum, and Jimmy Butler. After that, all NBA forward is a adventure. But Jimmy's locked in.
It's because of the injuries, and now Paul George probably misses the rest of the regular season. I don't want you to do there.
And by the way, on the net side of this thing, just because we're talking about this game, since Kevin Durant hurt his knee, Nets are 12-21. Since they made the trades, the Kyrie trade, they are 7-14. Safe to say, if they fall out of the top six and they're in the play-in, you're not going to feel very good if you're the Nets about making the playoffs, which ultimately might be good for the Nets because they would end up with a lottery pick. But
they have their pick this year. This is the year that they have their pick.
They do have, they would be swapped if they somehow won the lottery with Houston, mm-hmm. but they will have a pick. And, certainly if they fall out of that top six and they have to play, say, Atlanta and Toronto first couple, you're probably not going to be favored to win those games. So it's a pretty, pretty devastating loss from a playoffs standpoint from their side too.
If Jimmy Butler makes all NBA, which Bontemps believes he's got a very good shot. And it's just hard to, I don't know if you can put LeBron in there. We're going to talk about it in a second.
But Markkanen, Siakam. I had Paul George, but you make a point with him out.
Randall, I would just have Jimmy ahead of all those guys anyway. I mean, Jimmy's awesome.
Well, here's a point. If that happens, Jimmy Butler, I believe back-to-back years, might need Stats Williams on this one. Will not make the All-Star team and make all NBA.
That is correct.
He was an all-star in 2022.
He was.
Might have been 2 years ago. I'll look it up right now when he made it, but he definitely made it. He definitely did make the All-Star game 1 year and made all NBA. Might have been 21.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's.
Yes. He was an all-star. He was an all-star in 2021 or he was an all NBA player in 2021. Didn't make the All-Star game.
Okay. So twice 2 out of 3 years. All right. Well, he's on a max contract. That's all that matters. You know, he probably prefers to have the midseason break anyway. And, you know, he drops the hammer at the end. All right. We mentioned the Lakers. They're back to within one game of 500 on the back of Austin Reeves. I'm kind of not joking because Austin Reeves won in the last two games. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And I'm not saying that Austin Reeves is a transformational player or whatever, but I'm telling you right now, Austin Reeves won the last two games.
Do you think that they should hold LeBron out even if he's healthy just because it's Austin Reeves' team now?
I mean, I saw Jay Will said that. Jay Williams said that.
Also, Austin Reeves had 35-6-6 and then 25-11 in those two games. So yeah, I would say he led them to those wins. I don't think you're breaking ground by saying that.
Well, the thing is they moved him into the starting lineup and he basically played point guard.
Yeah.
He basically, you know, and I know Anthony Davis had 14 points in the third quarter of that game against the Suns, but the Suns
can make a pretty good argument. Yeah, you can make a pretty good argument right now. He's their second best player without LeBron playing.
The Suns won the third quarter where Anthony Davis scored 14. Anyway, the Lakers play the Thunder on Friday night. I don't know if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is playing in that game. It's hard for me to predict when Shai's going to play. They have a back-to-back.
Mark Daniel said earlier this week that back-to-backs are in play now for him. He's got improved with this abdominal injury. So,
the sixth seed is in play for the Thunder as well.
That's right. Certainly is.
And quite frankly, had Shai not gotten hurt last month and had to miss 3 or 4, and then he got COVID.
They might have been the 4 seed.
I don't know where they would be, but they would be higher.
And they're only a couple losses back of Phoenix now. That's what I'm saying. They could have been the 4 seed.
Well, I'll tell you this. I saw him play in Phoenix twice without Shai. They lost both games. I happened to be there.
Did that hurt your feelings that you didn't get to watch him? Were you perturbed?
Clearly.
No, because I got to watch Jalen Williams at least in one of the games. In the second game, Jalen Williams didn't play either because Jalen Williams missed some games too. But it's a good point. They might have beaten the Phoenix in those two games because they played Phoenix a couple days ago with Shai, and he lowered the boom, although Phoenix doesn't have Ayton right now. All right, my point is the Lakers. They put out an update about LeBron today. It was kind of a non-update, but within minutes of the update the Lakers put out that basically said he'll continue basketball activities, continue progressing. There was a ton of reporting that the hope was he'd be able to come back for the end of the regular season. LeBron then jumped onto Twitter and said he didn't have an evaluation and that nothing has changed and that he has no timetable. And I was like, but you understand that the team just put out a statement, LeBron. Like I don't know what happened there, but
he did finish this with, "I speak for myself." So,
and he does. Let me say this. This situation, although the injury is different, reminds me a lot of 2 years ago when Solomon Hill landed on his ankle. He had the high ankle sprain. He basically missed 4 or 5 weeks. He came back and played the last. He'll probably have played more in that than this. If this out, you know, he played like 4 or 5 of the last 6 games. Then they went into the playoff series. He put up decent numbers, but clearly was not 100%, limped through it. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers got knocked out in the first round. I believe by the Suns.
Jay Crowder doing a little salsa dance at the end there.
Yes, that absolutely is true. I wonder if we're headed for the same thing here, which is that LeBron, again, I wonder, I don't know 100% for sure where LeBron like normally wouldn't come back on this injury, but because the situation is where it is that he's going to try. And so, you know, the question really is, if you're LeBron and you're 38 years old and you smell the opportunity to try to do something in the playoffs, why wouldn't you come back?
Right.
You know, like, I mean, what's he saving it for? Like, if he blows out the tendon, he'll have, I don't know, he'll recover. Like, I mean, I'd be stunned that he doesn't come back. I don't know what he's going to give him, but I'd be stunned if he doesn't come back. And I mean, if you're the Lakers, you're seeing Austin Reeves and you're seeing D'Angelo Russell. And, you know, every now and then you're seeing Malik Beasley and you're seeing Jared Vanderbilt, like you're clinging to something, you're clinging to it.
You're clinging to executive of the year hopes. I mean, come on back, LeBron, and boost those things.
Well, it just sounds ridiculous. I mean, they're clinging to something. I mean, we've just been having this conversation about the Lakers.
Listen,
endlessly for months now.
If the regular season ended right now at 9 or 10:55 p.m. Eastern tonight, I would be seeing the Lakers right here in Dallas in the 9:10 play-in game.
Well, by the way, that's what I want to see, honestly. Imagine the theater of that.
Yeah, Luka versus LeBron, and the loser of that game is honestly, it's absolutely humiliating given their stature in this league.
Maybe they're playing for Kyrie Services next year. Winner, they should just have a contract on the court before the game. Winner gets to keep Kyrie.
How long of a contract?
Well, that's a whole other question.
Just put it under a ball at midcourt. Like, just put like the contract underneath the ball, and like whoever. By the way, McMahon, you left Dallas for that Memphis game, and all hell broke loose in Dallas, with protests, etc.
I did see the Mavs in Memphis. I saw speaking of post game events with Kyrie, I saw him decline a Dylan Brooks offer of a jersey swap. That was pretty damn entertaining.
It was almost as entertaining as his quote about it, which was like, maybe next time or something like
maybe next time. Well, I asked Dylan about it, and he goes, I wouldn't swap jerseys with me if I didn't know myself either. I was like, okay. He goes, I'll just sign his myself and put it up on my wall. So he was fine with the whole thing. I actually saw him. He was walking off the court, and he had Kyrie's jersey, and he had his jersey in his hand too, because he took his jersey off. Kyrie didn't take it. He had his jersey in his hand, and he saw Jaren Jackson Jr. Jaren had just finished up doing like the little on-court interview. And Dylan said he didn't take the jersey, and he started cracking up. So his feelings weren't hurt. He thought it was pretty funny.
Kyrie re-aggravated his foot in that game, though.
When Dylan Brooks stepped on it.
Is that when it was? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and actually there was a review of the play. Brooks was originally called for a foul, and they ended up giving Dwight Powell an offensive foul for, you know, shoving Brooks into Kyrie. But yeah, Brooks stepped on the foot and the ankle twisted, and so there was concern about the ankle immediately. But he said after the game that it was really a reaggravation of the foot injury, and obviously he sat out against the Warriors, and then we'll see with what's left of the Hornets coming to town tomorrow.
Well, the Hornets just got whipped by the Pelicans tonight.
And lost like three players during that game.
Did they?
Oubre, Rozier, and then Dennis Smith Jr. went out sick.
Oh, my God. Let me say this about Kyrie and foot injuries. And I want to be 100% clear. I'm not implying that this is the exact same injury that he had. But his first year playing with LeBron, he had a sore right foot. It happened in the playoffs. And he tried to play through it. He might have taken a game or two off, but he kept having to come out of games. And he played on the sore right foot, and he was like, man, I just don't have my acceleration. He complained about it, but he kept playing. Then his left knee started hurting him. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't finish a couple of playoff games with his left knee. And he went and saw James Andrews, and James Andrews said, you know, whatever. And like, I'm not 100% sure. I remember Kyrie at the time saying your body acts in mysterious ways. He thought that there was a connection. And so he played on the sore foot, which led to a sore knee, mm-hmm. took some time off, played on the sore knee, broke his kneecap. Kneecap surgery ended up getting infected, and he had to have the hardware mm-hmm. taken out, and he got some sort of infection, and it ruined his first season in Boston. So Kyrie has, I think his quote last week or something was like, I want to be able to walk when I'm 40. Kyrie's been through the ringer with this sore foot. So keep that in mind as he makes some decisions going forward. I don't know if it's a foot injury is the same. I know it was the same right foot.
Well, it was, he says it's near the big toe. And first he said it was worse than he thought. That's why it took a little longer than anticipated. He came back, and by your standards, he played pretty well, which is what we call 38-6-6 in the game-winning assist in LA. And then the first three quarters in Memphis, he had 28 points on 10-16 shooting. Didn't have any assists, but part of an assist is guys have to like make shots when you get them open looks. And then
that's also a throwback to the Cleveland days,
right? And so this injury actually happened, or the aggravation of it happened like very early in the third quarter. Fourth quarter, he went 0-8. That was the fourth quarter where one Maverick got a bucket. Jaden Hardy got three of them. Nobody else scored from the floor, including Kyrie. 0-8, which is, I believe, the worst shooting fourth quarter of his career in terms of most misses without a bucket. And, of course, Dylan Brooks was quick to credit his physical defense wearing Kyrie down over the course of the game.
Hey, you know, whatever. I don't know. Something happened.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Guys, it's all about confidence. Confidence knowing you'll be ready to go when your partner is. And confidence knowing you'll be able to go a few extra rounds when needed. Confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. And now they also have Vardenafil, mint-flavored chewables, with the active ingredient in Levitra and Staxin. Blue Chew's tablets are a performance enhancement for the bedroom and can help men gain extra confidence when it's time to perform. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll get your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problems here. Blue Chew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they prepare them to ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. So if you could benefit from an extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com. And there's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code HOOP at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code HOOP, to receive your first month free. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Can I say something else about that game, regardless of the protest stuff? I think the officials did Luka a favor, because twice he gave the money Manziel thing, twice. Now, I know that one happened with 2 seconds left, and you're probably not going to call it technical with 2 seconds left. But he did it earlier, and well, I was just watching on TV.
The thing is, with 2 seconds left, you've had 47 seconds and 58 or 47 minutes and 58 seconds of Luka just barking at you and all kinds of stuff. So listen, when you officiate a Luka game, you basically have to decide as a ref how much stuff am I willing to take, because there's going to be like he complains more than anybody in the league. It's just a fact.
Okay, complaining about calls, fine. He's implying they were on the take.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've rarely seen a situation that was more appropriate to call a technical foul.
Well, listen, who's the ref that tossed Scotty Barnes?
Scott
Which
Foster.
One was that? Was that? Oh yeah. Old Scott Foster. Shoot. Yeah. Scott Foster would have had him, you know, would have had him back at the house by, you know,
Scott well, Foster was in Phoenix on Wednesday, infuriating the Suns. He couldn't be bothered with but by the way, just before you go, Bontemps, I'm sorry, Luka's got 15 texts.
Hell yeah. Yeah, 16, but he got one rescinded. So yeah, 15 officially.
And the Mavs, Mavs can't exactly afford to have Luka missing games, especially with Kyrie hobbled.
That's my point. So yeah, I know. While people want to scream and holler about whatever went down there, I can't believe they didn't give him a tech for that. I think he did it right to the one ref's face at the end of the game. It wasn't like he was hiding it.
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
I think the Mavericks are lucky that they're getting Luka for this next game.
I agree. And by the way, for all this talk about, you know, Mark Cuban saying this is the worst call in the history of humankind, and Luka saying the rest around the take. Here's an idea. The Golden State Warriors are a goddamn horrendous road team. They can't beat anybody on the road all season. They're now 9-29 on the road this season. The only teams with worse records than that are Denver, San Antonio, and Houston. What do they all have in common? They suck, and they're at the bottom of the standings. Here's an idea. Not Detroit, not Denver. Sorry, Detroit. So here's an idea if you're Dallas. Beat a terrible road team at home in a game you absolutely need to win. How about you do that instead of saying that the refs are conspiring to beat you and saying that this is the worst call that ever has happened, when if your team was allegedly going to inbound the ball, you had nobody there to get the ball, which would seemingly mean that you didn't think you were going to get the ball. The whole thing, just ridiculous whining.
Yeah, and I didn't get to watch a lot of that game because I was in Memphis and, you know,
you were working.
Able to watch some on my phone. But one thing that I would recommend if you're interested in winning the game is there at the end where it's like Steph Curry's got the ball in his hands and your man goes and sets a screen. Luka, you might want to, as Jason Kidd would say, participate defensively instead of just kind of stand in the middle of the floor. Whoa, hey, there goes Steph Curry. He's really good at basketball. Oops, he's going to lay it up, and that's the game-winning points.
It was actually a pretty well-executed play. It was a pretty well-executed play.
Because they went right at Luka, and he didn't do anything.
Yeah, it was well-executed because they picked the right guy to go at and went at him and succeeded.
Right. So, listen, I'll say this. Luka, obviously, there's always going to be stuff with him and the refs. It increases as he takes his frustration out on the refs, right? And
no question.
Calls every game that he could get. The flip side of that is when you talk to other players about him on other teams, they're complaining about how the guy takes as many free throws as pretty much anybody in the league. About all the calls he does get. So whatever. He is most animated with the refs typically when he's frustrated about other things. And he's got a lot of things to be frustrated about right now. Cuban tends to raise the biggest stinks with the refs and other things when, you know, he's trying to cover up the problems with the Mavericks, and the Mavericks have a whole bunch of problems.
He protested against 3 years ago.
Yeah. Distract from problems with the Mavericks.
Yeah, for sure.
He protested the refs, game 3 years ago. Not only did the league reject the protest, they fined him $500,000 for what he said.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
And the refs, like, whether it was letter of the law, right? Like, they should have blown the whistle.
It was not good officiating.
Yeah, it was obviously
a weird play. Just stop with the whining about how this cost you the game. I mean, the Warriors can't beat anybody on the road. Like, just don't lose to the Warriors at home in a huge game.
There's also Christian Wood complaining to the ref about the call, and the ref pretty clearly telling him, you know, sorry, dude, it's Warriors ball. And I think C. Wood might have forgotten by the time we got back to the bench.
That's another pastime.
Well, and also the Mavs
Christian Wood.
Well, from the Mavs made this Kyrie trade, they're 7-11. So, you know, like,
yeah,
they're not supposed to be going 7-11.
No, they weren't. And I could sit here and say, yeah, well, hey, Luka missed time, Kyrie missed time, but they're 3-6 with both of them. So It's a massive risk all in deal that, hey, there's still time for magic to be created, but the results so far are really, really disappointing.
Well, Bontemps pointed this out, I think, last week. There's so much time spent paying attention to the difference between 6 and 7. The difference between 8 and 9 is massive.
Oh, huge.
Got to win one playoff. Got to win one out of two games to make the playoffs. They got to win two out of two to make the playoffs.
Right. And we'll see what happens with Clippers and Thunder right now. That is end of the first as we speak, and the Clippers are up. But I'm sorry, well, I think I just botched it. I think the Thunder are up. But no, Clippers are up. I was right. So if the Thunder lose that game, you've got a four-way tie at 36 and 37, 8, 9, 10, 11.
And the Jazz are a half game back, one less win.
Yeah, and the Wolves are only a half game up at 37 and 37. Yep. So, yeah, that the playing picture in the West is going to be fascinating to track over these last whatever couple weeks.
Well, and I'm going to tell you something else. The Hornets are in a tie. The Hornets, God, you can tell I'm tired. The Pelicans are in a tie for 10th with the Lakers. A tie for 9th with the Mavericks and the Lakers. They put out a statement about Zion saying that he's cleared for basketball activities. They're not going to bring him back immediately, but they'll reevaluate him in 2 weeks. There's 3 weeks left in the season.
There's 2 weeks left in the season. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
You're right, because I'm still computing the play-in as part of it. The regular season.
Yeah, regular season ends in 16 days.
Now, I would say that there's no way they're bringing Zion Williamson back. The guy hasn't played in 3 months, right? There's no way they're going to bring him back. But what if they get to the last day of the season and they're in tied for 10th?
Yeah, I would say they're least likely to be tied. They have won 3 in a row, which congrats to them. They have defeated the Rockets, Spurs, and Hornets.
Well, this is the thing we've talked about with the whole Kevin Durant situation, too. When a team says a guy's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, it almost never means the guy is playing in 2 weeks. It means they're going to put out another statement then saying the guy's progressed to some other thing, and then there'll be more steps after that. Yeah, but in this case,
it's a little bit different. Like, LeBron wasn't cleared for basketball activities today. Zion was cleared for basketball activities.
Well, based off Zion Williamson's history, I'm going to make a bet that he's just showing up and playing. And magically in 2 weeks.
Well, their last game of the season is in Denver against the Nuggets. The Nuggets are going to have that clinched. I don't even know who's going to play in that game.
Yeah,
probably no one.
That's
a win.
I take it back. That's the end of March. That's a few days, not the end of April. They actually have a 4-game road trip that they're about to go on. I guess, I don't know. I just saw that in that. Why would they not just rule them out? You know, they left the door open. You know, they're not doing them any favors by doing that. Because what if it comes down to that? Because I think there is a slightly more than 2 weeks left. So,
yeah, there's 2.5 weeks left. That's all. Okay, they put it out on Wednesday. There was 2.5 weeks. Yes.
That leaves a half a week. You know, I mean, is, you know,
I'm just saying it's the same thing we said with the Durant thing. It's just generally, that's not how it works. Maybe in this case it will be different, but generally that's not what happens. And with a guy coming off a hamstring injury who's been out for that long, it's hard to imagine they're just going to throw him out there. Maybe they will.
Well, right, especially with his injury history of getting re-injured.
Yeah, you know? it doesn't seem likely. Now, who knows? Maybe he could come back a week after that. Maybe he could play in the play-in games, right? Or maybe he could play in the last game of the regular season. I don't know. But chances are he's not going to be able to play.
It is kind of a crazy commentary on where the league is right now that we've got Zion, LeBron, and KD, three guys who were on the All-NBA team last year, three teams who are trying to find their footing.
Paul George, Kyrie.
Well, I mean, Paul's going to be on the list. I know, but Paul's going to be out for a while. That's a new injury. But like now, there's
Kyrie
each of those
is day to day, but who knows how long that thing could linger.
I know, but my point is each of those three teams is going to have to make a decision here with a superstar player about whether to bring them back or not in a season where they're all like around 500. Well, the Suns are above 500. The Suns are heading the wrong direction. They've lost 7-9, but
Suns are going to be fine. Well, it was all good.
Let's do trivia.
Wow.
Then we'll talk about the
rapport on this podcast has taken a turn for the worse.
No, I'm just having a little fun. That's all.
Trivia, then we'll talk about the Suns.
I do remember who the host is. That's why I was needling on.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
The great Willis Reed, the captain, passed away this week. Two trivia questions about him. One should be, I think, be pretty easy. There are three players in NBA history who won MVP, All-Star Game MVP, and Finals MVP in the same season. One of them is Willis Reed. Who are the other two?
I'm going to guess LeBron. LeBron
is incorrect.
Whoa.
I wouldn't have gotten Willis Reed on that, so...
Willis Reed was the first one to do it. There's one thing.
The hard one, I think, on this is All-Star Game MVP.
I don't remember any All-Star
because games. Who remembers any of them? Yeah. You just guess
Kareem?
Nope.
Well, wow. I'm going to guess Jordan just because he won so
Jordan, many. Jordan did it twice. Then one other player did it one time.
Yeah, I just don't see Kareem as being an All-Star Game MVP.
It was another center. I'll say that.
It was another center. I'm going to say
Moses Malone.
Not Kareem. It was not Moses Malone.
Shaq.
Shaquille O'Neal.
All right. That wasn't bad. It was a good question. And we worked our way through it. You giving that last hint brought it home, to be honest.
It did. The other question I was going to ask, which is probably going to take too long anyway, so I'll skip it, was how many Willis was also the first player to win multiple finals MVPs because the award didn't start till I think 1968 or 69. So like Bill Russell didn't count for it. There were, I think, 10 or 11 guys that did it. But the other question is just better because it was shorter. But just wanted to highlight Willis Reed.
Oh, you were going to ask one of the all-time who's won multiple finals MVPs?
Yeah, because there are like nine of them. So we can go through it if you want.
We can go through it. LeBron. Kobe.
LeBron. Yep.
Shaq.
Yep.
Obviously Jordan.
Yep.
LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, Bird, Magic, Kareem.
Yep.
So you said how many?
There's 11.
11? Well, hell. Wendy, well, how many is that guy? I forgot how many fingers. I using
just,
the thumb?
You're just whipping through.
I was just listening, to be honest.
Was I at seven or eight?
You got, I think, eight of them.
Okay, good. Because all right,
did I got confused. Did Isaiah win both those Pistons?
Nope. Joe Dumars won one of those.
That's right.
I'm trying to think of Kobe, Shaq.
You said Jordan, LeBron, Shaq, Kobe, Bird. Gave you Willis, and I believe you said Kareem. So there's
Duncan.
One. Tim Duncan. Oh, yeah.
Duncan
there's,
for sure.
There's three guys you have not named so far. Four guys. All couple past Hall of Fame players.
Jerry West.
No.
Jerry West was too old. Actually, because you said Tim Duncan, there's three. Three names left.
I thought Jerry West won one year when he didn't win.
He's the only person to win it, one being on the losing team. So one of them was in one of them's an all-time great from the 80s. You haven't said yet. You said Bird.
I said Bird and Magic.
Oh, I didn't hear you say Magic. Okay. So didn't hear you.
Akeem.
And then the other two guys you haven't mentioned are the most recent ones to do it.
Oh, duh. KD.
KD's one.
Oh yeah. He won too.
The most recent. So Kawhi.
And Kawhi's the other one.
That's because I was thinking teams that won multiple titles, but obviously Kawhi's the exception there.
That's right.
All right, that wasn't a bad one.
So there you go.
Good job.
I'm glad you're grading the trivia questions now.
I did say after Durant got hurt, after spending time with the Suns, that they would probably, I felt they would still be winning, that they would keep their head above water. And all I'm going to say is two things.
They are still in fourth.
That's right. Two things before Bontemps dances on me. One, they're still in fourth place. Although if the Clippers win tonight, they're going to essentially tie them. The percentage points, I think, might still favor Phoenix, but they're still in fourth place. They haven't lost any ground technically, and Ayton has gotten hurt.
Also, here's the thing. We didn't, because I was more toward the Wendy side of this discussion, and it wasn't, hey, the Suns are going to light the world on fire without KD. It's that,
well, look. Brian did sort of think that.
I didn't think they're going to light the world on fire, but I did think that they had two games left with Sack. I thought they might get to three, which
I thought that
clearly not going to be happening.
I thought they would stay in four. My point was, I didn't think that injury, knock on wood, KD will be back by the playoffs, impacted their title hopes.
No, I know. I was just giving Brian a hard time.
No,
because
it's been
he was
no. Hey, you're it's not been. Being, a, you're, it's fair. It's been a huge letdown, and they are consistently bitching about the officiating. You're talking about, you know,
Cuban, oh, they are, oh no, that, hey boy, let me tell you, there's this conspiracy to make sure the Suns get doubled up on the free throw line. I mean, these refs are having secret meetings and again, concierge lounges and all kinds of stuff.
Well, and again, as we have talked about, the Suns are 28th in the NBA in free throw attempt rate. We talked about it before Durant got hurt, we talked about it since. They are a jump shooting team that does not put pressure on the rim. They do not get a lot of foul shots. It's not some grand conspiracy against the Suns that they don't get calls. They don't have guys to get to the foul line. It's just the way it is, especially not with Kevin Durant, because at least with him and Devin Booker, they have a couple guys who sometimes get to the line. And without him, it's just Devin Booker. And then a bunch of guys who can't really dribble and just are shooters. And so you're not going to get foul shots. And if you're playing against Giannis, you're going to give up a ton of foul shots. Like, it's just how it is.
There's been two rants in the last week from Monty. Last night in LA, I think earlier I said the game was in Phoenix. It was in LA. Booker had 12 free throws.
Austin Reeves had 13, baby.
Well, that's the thing. I will say this, like, while I know Monty is complaining about it, and I think I mentioned one of the things that they are pointing at is Mikal Bridges' free throw rate doubling when he went to Brooklyn. I think the Suns know they just foul too much. I think it's a combination of, yeah, they're a jump shooting team, but also their defense has,
yeah, and they foul a lot.
Has gotten into some bad habits. They put their hands on people. And so it's a combination of both. But, like, you know, last night they're freaking out because it's 46-20 in the free throws in an 11-point game. But this, if it keeps happening over and over and over, it dulls your case. If it happens every night, it dulls your case.
Yeah, it's not. They need to stop fouling, which Monty has also said at times, and they don't draw foul shots.
And generally, Monty, for the most of his career there, has been a kind of a no excuse. He kind of preaches a no excuse attitude, and they're kind of pointing at excuses here.
Well, it's hard. It's harder to say that my team isn't very good. And my point from when Durant got hurt was that this is a team with four good players. One of them is Chris Paul, who is a billion years old. And if you subtract Kevin Durant from that mix, there's just not a lot of talent there, especially after they traded Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges.
I mean, and this is one thing. Now Torrey Craig actually had a good game in LA. What you were saying is you thought their players 5 through 8 weren't good enough. Mm-hmm. I thought they could stitch it together. That was my position. And the fact that Landry Shamet came back, he missed like 2 months with a foot injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's come back and, like, immediately after not playing for 2 months, immediately became their best bench player, like far and away the most productive bench player.
Yeah.
Underscores your your point.
Yeah. I mean, look, and also, like, we're talking about this thing with Zion. Like, look, Kevin Durant has just generally taken a while to come back from injuries. He's in his mid-30s.
He comes back a house
of fire. I know he comes back great, but the idea he's just going to walk back on the court and be playing 45 minutes a game and it's all going to be fine, I just think strains credulity. No. That's the problem.
I agree. I think it's a hard sell right now to believe that they're going to do this. And they were the bet. I think they were the betting favorite.
I mean, they were the betting favorite, but the Vegas, as we've seen with like MVP and things too, the Vegas doesn't have a lot of idea what's going on. And look, the best argument you can make for the Suns is the West stinks and none of these teams are good. And if Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are healthy, who's going to beat them? Like, that's the default argument, is the best argument for them. Cause you know, I still would say Golden State if Wiggins comes back, but who knows if he's coming back? We're 2 weeks in the regular season. We still have no update on him.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you think, and I just looked this up, do you think the fact that ISOs and pick and roll ball handler possessions for Mikal Bridges, the fact that those have tripled since he's gone to Brooklyn?
Yes.
Do you think that has anything to do with him getting fouled more often?
I got equally
annoyed. I'm just asking.
I got equally annoyed at this rant about Mikal Bridges the other day. I was like, yeah, he's got his usage rate just skyrocketed.
Of course,
he's getting more foul shots.
And
when he played in Phoenix, he shouldn't have had a usage rate of like 12%.
I saw some Suns fans basically, they put something together like his shot profile is not that different. There's a big difference than if your layups are coming off of cuts and if your layups are coming off of you got the ball in your hand, you're attacking off the dribble.
You know what part of the shot profile is different? The shot number. He's doing a lot more shooting. Like, maybe he should have been shooting more.
Well, that's the thing. Well, that's why they use the word rate as opposed to sheer volume. But my point is, the Suns know they foul too much. Okay. Regardless of what they may say publicly, they know that they do. All right. Before we go, McMahon, wondered if you could talk to us about your little 4 days in Memphis and the Jaw situation. I understand that they were showing support for their player. Of course, everybody's going to cheer for him, but the kind of stance that it came off that, you know, like, you know, he's pushing back against, you know, adversity. I mean, this situation was, you know, it was a self-inflicted situation. And I mean, they got to move on. I get it.
Well, fortunately, it wasn't a self-inflicted wound, but certainly that's a situation where there could have been one.
I don't know about that, but anyway.
But so, no, what, like, there's...
And also, what do you think about the Grizzlies going forward, too?
So, honestly, I've said this before. I believe it now. I think the fact that there was this kind of, like, hey, wake-up call, you know, call it a crisis, whatever you want to call it, with Ja, where he was going to have to realize that, okay, man, like, this is a serious situation. He's going to have to listen to some people, whether it's, you know, focus on mental health, managing stress, however you want to present it publicly. Like, dude, the way things were going, got to slow down, you know, got to not just tap the brakes, but hit the brakes pretty hard. I think that can be a good thing for the Grizzlies the rest of this season and hopefully long term. I think, you know, basketball wise, Ja's going to be Ja, you know, and like I would be really surprised if he was just tearing it up out in the clubs and doing all this other stuff for the rest of the season. And like
whatever he did before, his performance has always been great. This isn't an on-court.
Although I looked up his home road splits, they weren't drastically different. I think that if you talk to people, you can find road games where he wasn't necessarily locked in a game plan defensively, you know, the little effort things that you could find some of that, but hopefully, you know, that stuff will be cleared up. And again, the guy, I mean, he's a superstar, right? The only reason he, like, this might have cost him all NBA, but nobody argues that he's an all NBA talent. My biggest concerns about, and I will say one other little silver lining here is this really, like, they needed Jaren Jackson to, he's defense player of the year frontrunner. They needed him to really kind of step up on the offensive end, and that dude has been hooping. I mean, just had 37 in the game last night. He's more aggressive, I think, than he's ever been. I mean, for a 6'11", you know, big body guy, like he does some things that are guard-like with the ball in his hands. And, you know, not to mention just like he can get down there and physically and athletically overpower people. And so, you know, I think they need Jaren to be a star to have a chance. And he's certainly, it's funny, he hates the word potential, hates it, because he's heard it so much, heard it all his life, heard it all his NBA career. Somebody asked him a question about the way he's been hooping offensively last night, and he sarcastically used the word potential like 8 times in his answer. But we're seeing some of his potential, and, you know.
Nope, like, you just did it.
Well, it's true, because it's true. You know, I mean, and you look at the games, and this is including last night, but the games since Ja went out, he is averaging on 53.5% shooting, 24 points per game. They need that type of player from Jaren Jackson, especially because he's going to have to play major minutes. Brandon Clark's gone. Steven Adams, they don't like have
to assume idea. You have to assume Steven Adams is gone too. You can't assume he's going to be back, because again, he's getting reevaluated when the playoffs start. He's probably not going to be available.
He's already had a setback.
Right. At this point, if Steven Adams is able to play in the playoffs, that would have to be considered.
That's a bonus.
A significant bonus. But you know, we've talked about the West. Like, can the Grizzlies win the West? Sure. Somebody has to. I don't know if they're fine in the West. But let me tell you what
the strongest case, in my opinion, the strongest case for the Grizzlies winning the West is they've had the best defense in the West for the entire season.
Well, actually, that's not true. Since Jaren Jackson started playing,
they have the number two defense. I don't know if the updates from tonight. They have the number two defense in the league, mm-hmm. and the top like 7 or 8 defenses, other than the Grizzlies, are all in the East. Now, I said this before, when you're parsing defensive rating, they're really tightly packed. You're either at the top, in the middle, or at the bottom. The Grizzlies have been in the top all year, and most of the teams at the top are in the East. The only other team that sniffed it has been the Suns. So the Grizzlies, if you're a Grizzlies fan and you want to present your case to anybody about why you think your team can win 4 rounds or at least win 3 rounds, they defend. And even with losing Steven Adams, where they lose a certain aspect of their defense, they've been able to consistently get that done.
I mean, the biggest thing they lose to Steven Adams is their offense falls apart often. And Steven Adams has had one of the great offensive rebounding seasons of all time this season. And just the extra possessions he provides them, it's even more important than on the defensive end, both with his screening for Ja and the amount of extra shots they get. That's the biggest flaw. And since Jaren came back in mid-November, they have the best defense in the league.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they weren't good defensively before. And again, I think that's like I don't know how he wouldn't win Defensive Player of the Year this year, to be honest with you. I think he's got that strong.
You can make a case for Brook Lopez. You can maybe make a case for another guy or two, but I haven't completely studied it yet, but certainly as of now, Jaren would have my vote.
Yeah. And then, their biggest flaw outside of, hey, who's going to rebound if Adams can't play, is they've been a mediocre half court offensive team all season long. And that gets me right back to, they need Jaren to continue to play like this. Like, they need him to be a 20 plus point per game scorer if they're going to go deeper than they went last year.
All right. Well, we're all over the country here. And, thanks for staying up late with us, Jackson, our producer, after going to the game. Thank you.
We got to get more Jackson scouting reports. We got to make that a weekly feature.
Let's hear about the Yankee starting rotation after his week in Florida. Bontemps, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Thank you, Jackson. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We will talk to you guys beginning of next week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.